Well, it's hard to believe, hard for me to believe anyway, but we're already at the fourth and final talk in the series that I'm doing this month called the Self-Talk Series. How many of you have heard the first three talks? Got here either in person or online? That's great. That's good. And how many of you who have heard these have started paying attention to what you say and to what other people say during the week? Scary, isn't it? You know, it really is. Now, because I like to say, I frequently do, that awareness is always the first step to spiritual growth. Because if we aren't aware of what we're doing, or if we aren't aware of why certain things keep happening in our life the way they do, it's going to be hard for us to change what's going on, because we'll just keep on doing what we've always done, and we'll keep on getting the results that we've always gotten in the past. That's what happens. Now, every so often, if we're not aware, we still may luck out every now and then, and something good may happen, even though we don't believe we deserve it. Or somebody may do something nice for us, because they feel sorry for us. But for the most part, if we live our life without awareness, we will go through life the way most people do, which is doing whatever we can to try and distract ourselves from all the parts of our life that we don't like. Now, the only good thing about living this way, if you want to call it good, is that we will have lots of people around us that we can talk to. Because the kind of people that we will attract will probably be people who want to talk about the same kind of problems that we like to talk about. The problem with this is, if we are interacting with the people that we attract in the way that most people interact, we're not going to be talking about solving our problems or healing our problems or transcending our problems, which we're perfectly capable of doing. We will be talking with them about how bad they are, how long we've had them, and whose fault they are. That's what our conversation will be composed of. And whenever there's no one else around for us to talk to about the problems, guess what we'll be doing? We'll be talking about the same things to ourselves. So unfortunately, if our conversations don't change with other people, and if our self-talk doesn't change, our life isn't going to change either. That's what we need to realize. Now, over the last few weeks, we've been looking at how the solution to this dilemma is not a psychological or an intellectual solution, it is a spiritual solution. And when I say the solution is a spiritual solution, I don't mean that we need to ask God to solve it for us. I mean that we are the only ones who can solve it, and that we're going to have to do it using spiritual principles. So that means that we may need to try doing something different in the way we look at the world, in the way we communicate with one another, and most important of all, in the way that we talk to ourselves. So we need to listen to what it is that we are saying. We need to choose something better to say, and then we need to practice saying those things on a regular basis. But at the core of this new spiritual practice, because that's really what it is, if our beliefs are blocking our growth, or if our beliefs are blocking what we might call our spiritual evolution, then we also need to practice believing something different, not just saying something different. So we may need to practice believing something different about our job, that was the first week, about our health, that was the second week, and we may need to believe something different about our ability to prosper. And if we do that, if we practice believing something better, then we're going to have a lot more interesting and positive and productive things to talk about, and as a special added bonus, we're going to attract a much higher grade of people to talk with, which is a really good thing to have. Now, today we're going to talk about one more area of our life that takes up a lot of our attention and affects most of our thoughts and conversations, and that is our relationships. You knew we were going to get to this eventually, so okay. Even though we come into this world alone, with our mother's help, of course, and we go out of it alone, at last count, there are almost 7 billion of us taking up space on this relatively small planet, breathing the same air, drinking the same water, and walking on the same ground. And though the number of people that each one of us may meet and interact with in our lifetime is relatively small compared to the total world population, every one of us also has a very special, very small group of people that we are closely connected to during all or part of our lifetime, whether their presence thrills us or not. We've got the group that we're connected with. Now, some of these special people in our life are there by choice, and some of them in our life are in our life simply because we were born into the same family or because circumstances somehow threw us together. Some people come into our life by accident, and at some point we become so close to them that we couldn't imagine living our life without them. That's nice. And then there are those people that we do everything we can to choose to be with, and now we can't seem to get rid of them even when we want to. So we've got both sides of the spectrum. Now, obviously, there are a lot of other people that we meet and spend time with on a much more surface level, like coworkers and brief acquaintances, the people we run into on the street all the time. But the relationships I want to talk about today are the ones that affect our life directly, often in a major way. So family, close friends, and love interests. Those are the three kinds of relationships that affect us the most. Coincidentally, they are also the three kinds of relationships that we talk about the most, both to ourselves and to other people. And as we've been saying all month in this series, the way that we talk about our close relationships, meaning the words we choose and the energy that we put behind those words, actually affects the relationship that we have with them going forward. So it affects us, it affects them, and it affects the way we either get along or don't get along, short-term or long-term. So let's start with family first. Okay, we'll start with family. Because in our family is the first place that we learn how to deal with other people. Now, it would be nice if we got lessons, but that's not how we learn. Most of us learn through trial and error, with a little emphasis on the error part, I think. Now, I want to point out that we still have a relationship with our family, whether they are still living or not. So if you're the only one left, you still have a relationship with your family that affects you. Just remember that, a mental, emotional, and spiritual relationship. Now, we each have a relationship with our family as a whole. We talk about them as a group. And we each have a unique relationship with each individual in our family. Now, for most of us, there are parts of our family relationships that are constantly changing throughout our life, and then there are other parts that don't seem to change at all. Sometimes things get better through the years with our family. Sometimes, for some people, they get worse. But to me, the most interesting thing about our relationship with our family is where the changes that we see actually come from. And let me explain. You see, many of us are under the impression that we grow and change for the better as we age, while our family remains pretty much the same. We seem to be under that impression. We seem to think that as we get older and we gather more life experience with our friends and our other relationships away from our family, that we get the ability to see our family more clearly for who they are. And as a result, we frequently, not always, but frequently respond in one of two ways. Either through our great relationship wisdom that we have now acquired, we try to tell our family what they are doing wrong and how they can fix it, or we decide, because of what we've seen, that our family is never going to change and we do our best to avoid them. We go one of two ways. Meanwhile, this is what's funny. If one of our siblings or our parents tries to tell us what we are doing wrong in our life and how to fix it, we resent it. Or if one of our siblings decides that we're not going to change, who would say I wouldn't change? I'm always evolving, right? If they think I'm not changing, I'm always the same way I was, and they try to avoid me, I feel hurt. So that's kind of a family dance that we do. But in our conversations with our friends, or with our therapist, we talk to them about family stuff too. In our conversations with people outside of the family, we actually talk about our family in ways that we are not willing to talk about with them. We talk about it differently. So we tell our stories to our friends, to the people outside, in terms of the things that someone in our family did to us when we were growing up, or the good things that they didn't do. We may talk about how our father emotionally abused us, or how our mother wasn't nurturing, if it's a negative situation. We may talk about how our younger brother got all the attention, or we had to work our way through college while our younger sister got, you know, the benefit of the parents helping them. And these are all childhood issues, obviously, in the past. But it's funny how today, as adults, we still talk about our family in those same terms. For example, I may still describe my oldest brother, who was a lazy teenager, as a lazy adult. That's the way I see him. Or my sister, who was always very insecure, as a grown woman who lacks confidence. That's the filter through which I see her. Which means, because my perception of them has not changed, the way I talk about them and the way I see them may not have changed either. So it's quite possible that in my mind, I don't see them as they are. I still see them as they were. I still see them as they were. But it's also quite likely, and this is where it's important for us to understand it in this teaching, it's also quite likely that I am seeing them as I was when we were both growing up. I'm seeing them from my perspective. And until I can create a space with love and forgiveness in my mind and in my heart for them to grow and change, I will never be able to relate to them as the person that they could be and enjoy the relationship with them that I would really enjoy having. That's how I get in the way. Now, we do the same with our parents. We do the same with our children. I can't tell you how many people I have had coming in counseling, who talk to me about their parents as if the person talking to me still lived at home. And they're 30, 40, 50 years old. Even if their parents are now living with them, they talk about it that way. Or the people who talk to me about their 30 or 40-year-old kids as if the kids were still teenagers. I hear it all the time. Even though on a mental level we know that our family has grown or changed, our old issues remain in the back of our consciousness, and we end up automatically saying the same old stuff about them that we've always said. That's what keeps our present selves from having a present relationship with them, because our beliefs about them are stuck in the past. Okay, it's obvious that most of us here have been living away from our family for a long time. I mean, we may be still living in the same city, but we're not seeing them every single day. And I know that a lot of you here are very close to your family because you had wonderful family upbringings. And I also know that some of you, because you've told me, have not spoken to some of your family members for years, which is certainly your choice. But what I notice the most in terms of what we're talking about today in this series is how the people who have loving families always talk about their family in loving terms, even when they aren't getting along, even when there's problems going on. On the other hand, those people who have decided that they no longer choose to be related to their family of origin always speak in angry or critical ways about their family, even if they haven't had to deal with them for years. Even if they're dead and gone, that's how they talk about them. In either case, even though the family history, whatever it was, may have led to their problems with the family in their first place, the language that they have gotten into the habit of using when they talk about their family to their friends reinforces the old conflicts, for better or worse, and keeps them going. Then again, this is where there's hope. I have also seen how forgiveness of one's family members at a mental, emotional, and spiritual level can open even the most angry and bitter heart and lead to kind words and reconciliation between parents and children and brothers and sisters who may not have spoken for years. I've seen that happen more than once. Now, our friendships work the same way. In fact, some of our friendships can be closer than family. How many of you have a friend who's closer than any of your siblings or anyone in your family? I certainly do. When we become friends with someone, and I don't mean just close acquaintances, I mean real, honest-to-God, deep, close, personal friends, it's usually because we both happen to be at a point in our lives where we feel a common bond, where we feel a common bond, where we feel that we can trust this person with our deepest secrets, and where we feel that we can depend upon them to be there when we need them. That's why we like to say you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your families. You choose the people that you really trust. Of course, what really happens when a friendship begins is we meet someone and we see something in them that reflects something in us, and we are delighted by what we see. We really are. When we meet a friend, we are actually holding up a mirror to one another, and we like what we see. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a bad thing. That's why we talk to our friends the way we like them people to have people talk to us. And that's why we talk about our friends the way we would like to have people talk about us. Because that reinforces our connection. It demonstrates the trust that we feel towards one another. And if either one of us betrays this trust over something serious, then we both have to somehow heal that sense of betrayal or the friendship will end. Now, the problem doesn't have to be permanent, but if we reach the point where we are betrayed by a friend and we start talking to other people about how bad a friend that person was, the likelihood of that friendship being renewed becomes pretty slim because we can't expect to renew trust if all we talk about is lack of trust or betrayal. And that leads us to the big stuff, romantic relationships, okay? What about the people in our life who become a part of our heart and our soul but drive us insane on a regular basis? Okay? Anybody got one of those? Don't raise your hands. Just think about it, okay? All right. What about the intimate relationship that we have wanted for years that we can't seem to find? What about that? What about the person that we love more than life itself who tears out our heart and stomps on it with stiletto heels? What about that? What do we say about them? And even more important, what does what we say about them say about us? Let's talk about that for a few minutes. Now, the first thing for us all to remember is that the most intimate and important relationship in our life, the one that has to be healthy before any other relationship can be healthy, is the relationship we have with whom? With ourselves. Okay, I know this. You know this. We all know this, okay? But we don't always remember it. We don't. We seem to have this strange idea that when we are dealing with other people, that the stuff we dislike about them actually has something to do with them. But it doesn't. It doesn't. That's the big illusion. You remember that saying, we don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are? It's a great little catchy metaphysical solution, t-shirt kind of a thing. Well, if you change that to what we're talking about here, we do not see our significant other as they are, we see them as we are. Now, we may not like it, but that's the way it works. You see, even though romantic love is a feeling, it's not an intellectual thing, it's a feeling, it's a something, an emotional something that makes our brain shut down and our imagination go into overdrive, that's what it does, even though it's that, words are an important part of attracting, building, deepening, maintaining, or healing our romantic relationships. From the first opening pickup line that leads to courtship or the bedroom, whichever one, okay, to the last words we say at the cemetery or the lawyer's office, however it ends, all right, our language reflects what we feel about ourselves, it reflects what we feel about our significant other, and it reflects what we believe about how a relationship should look and how we want it, the direction that we want it to go. Because we cannot read each other's minds, we mostly communicate with one another through the words that we use. Yes, body language is important. Yes, eye contact and touch and flowers and chocolate help too. All those different things. They all send a message. But words are extremely important. The problem is, when we are in love, not only are we not sure if what they are saying is what they mean, we're not even sure if what we are saying is what we mean. That's the problem we run into. So when we look into someone's eyes and say, I love you, but our heart is saying, I can't believe you just said that, okay? We got a problem. We got a problem. When we are saying, maybe we shouldn't see each other anymore, but inside we are thinking, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, then we have a disconnect. We have a disconnect between our words and our inner spiritual desires. That's why in romantic situations, before we say anything out there, we need to listen to what our heart is saying in here. Because the two of them need to be in harmony if we want our relationship to be authentic. Of course, once again, it's always interesting when you compare what we say to our partner in a relationship to what we say to our friends about our relationship. If you listen to a group of women, for example, talking together about their relationship, or a group of guys talking together about their relationships, whatever it is, it's usually pretty honest. People are pretty honest when they're talking to their friends. And you know, it doesn't matter if we're talking about gay or straight, young or old, or even what country they are living in. When we are with our friends is when we usually say what we really feel, not in the bedroom. Okay, that's a different scenario. So if everything that we say to our friends about relationships is negative or fearful or critical, then that's the kind of relationship we're probably going to end up with no matter how it starts. The funny thing is, just listening to that kind of a language, just being around it, can affect us even if we don't feel all that strongly about it being true. In other words, if we hang around people who are always complaining about their spouse, their partner, or their ex, unless we are extremely clear about what we believe in here about love and relationships and our ability to be happy with someone, their language will eventually affect us. It really will. We will start seeing the flaws that they see in their relationship showing up in our relationship or in the people that we meet. Now, the big theme we've been talking about this entire month is that our words reflect our thoughts, and our thoughts reflect our beliefs, and our beliefs form the foundation for the kind of life we create. That's what we've been talking about in all the different areas. So if we want to have a loving relationship, we need to be sure that we believe that a loving relationship is possible and that there's no reason at all we can't have one. That's the first thing we need to believe. Then we need to think about what a loving relationship feels like and looks like. And finally, we need to talk about the good parts of all the relationships that we see and not to spend our precious time and energy talking about the bad parts. I mean, if we always go home and criticize our spouse for the things they didn't do, how long do you think that the marriage is going to last? If every time we have a date with a new person, as soon as we get home, we call up our friends and tell them about what a mess this date was and how I never seem to attract any good people when I date them, what do you think the rest of our dating history is going to look like? If we are not in a relationship and we continually tell our friends and family, you know, a person my age doesn't have any options, you know, or I don't care if I'm alone or not, we might as well sell the king-size bed because we are not going to need it. We are not going to need it, okay? But the most painful use of language that I see comes from those who talk about the relationships they had that turned out badly. That's where it's really sad. And here's an example. I have a woman friend. She's never been in this church. She lives on the West Coast, who was in a marriage for 24 years, raised three lovely daughters. And she was married to a man that I didn't care for very much, but since I didn't have to live with him, that didn't matter to me. So the sad part was she didn't care for him very much either. In fact, she had been unhappy for a number of years, and she spoke about it frequently to me and I'm sure to many other people that she knew. Well, one day I heard through the grapevine that her husband had run off with a younger woman. Okay, scenario, all right. So I called her. I called her to see how she was doing. And when I got her on the phone, she was so angry that it almost made me nauseous hearing her say that. And as the weeks and the months went by, it only got worse. She'd make comments to people who didn't even know him about what she thought about him, all right? It got to be quite predictable and quite boring, so I stopped calling her. Then one day I heard, same grapevine, that she had met a wonderful man and they began to date. He adored her. He treated her like a queen. He proposed to her and she accepted. So when I called to congratulate her and mention how well things had turned out, she went right back into her old monologue about her ex. Right off the bat, it was very, very interesting. Only this time, instead of listening quietly and hanging up at the first opportunity, which I had done in the past, I told her that instead of complaining all the time about her ex, she ought to be sending him flowers once a week. She ought to do that. Because he did something for her that she did not have the courage to do for herself. He ended their unhappy marriage. He ended their unhappy marriage, which she would still be in. Now, he did not do it in the most loving way. But that doesn't really matter. Because she now has the chance to be happier than she's ever been if she will allow herself to be. And that's what she needs to be talking about every chance she gets. Every chance she gets. I guess the best way to sum up this whole series this month is to say that maybe we need to stop speaking our mind and to start speaking God's mind. That's one way we could say it. No matter what has happened to us in the past or what our situation is right now, it does not have to stay that way. However, this is true whether things are going well or not. What we have to remember is, if things are going great, we can always make them worse. We can always make them worse. And we do this by not paying attention to where our thoughts and our words are going. That's why we need to do regular prayer and meditation work to make sure that we are not becoming complacent, that we're not becoming complacent. But if we are interested, as most of us are, in allowing our life to get better, not forcing it, but allowing our life to get better, the best way to start is to know that something better is possible, whether we are talking about the work we do, the way we feel, the money we have, or the love that we share. There are always levels upon levels, higher and higher and deeper that we can reach if we allow our beliefs and our thoughts and our words to all work together to bring us to the place where we want to be. So that's what these four simple affirmations, talk titles, whatever, for this month can do to remind us. So repeat after me. I love my job. I love my job. I feel terrific. I feel terrific. I can afford that. I can afford that. And I am so in love. I am so in love. My suggestion is that you write these down, memorize them, and say them as often as you can, because they are the truth in your life, and they are the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a breath or two. Roll your head around on your shoulders. Let's just relax. Take the ideas that resonated with you, whether they are for you or a friend, and take these ideas for yourself. Recognize this. We live in a universe made of love. This love is supportive, it is strong, it is powerful. It does not come from anywhere, it is everywhere present. It is never hidden, though we can fail to see it if we're not looking. And that love is constantly flowing, not just to us, but through us and from us. The love that comes from us can surround us. We don't need to get it from any other person, but we can also allow it to expand and touch others and have their love and ours be shared in whatever way we decide. This can be with our family, with our parents, even if they're gone, with our children, with our brothers or sisters, even if they believe things that are quite different from us. Even if we don't speak, we can love them from afar. This is true for our friends. We can honor them and respect them as we would hope that they do the same for us. And it is true for the people in our life to whom we give our heart. And we don't really give our heart, we share our heart. We share love with those that we love the most. Both of us are experiencing the same love 100% from each of us. This is the deepest, richest, most loving and powerful relationship we could ever create, and every single one of us can have it if we don't have it yet. This is the truth. This is what we know. So as we remind ourselves of all these truths, that we are prosperity in action, that we are health and wholeness in physical form, that we are infinite creativity in everything we do, and that we are the love of Spirit expressing itself in the world as us. As we recognize this, these truths become ours to the degree that we allow them to the degree that we talk about them, think about them, and feel them, they become our truth. So I invite you now to take a few moments in the silence of your own mind, and in this silence, simply know that you are successful, healthy and whole, prosperous, and deeply loved. Know this for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own, the truth of life, the truth of spirit. This is the way our life is going. We welcome it. This is our intent. Knowing this, we give thanks for all the gifts we have been given and all the gifts we have yet to give, and we give thanks for simply being alive, being present in this incredible world. We release this awareness, knowing that it is the truth for us now and always in everything we do, every person we're with, in every experience we have, and so it is.